Sometimes I'm amazed as to how things work out. Sometimes I can't decide whether it's coincidence or it's divine providence. I do not know. The reason I'm saying that is because we've been asked by the Archdiocese, and also we need to talk about our diocesan services fund, DSF. And it's interesting because the readings are all about money and about possessions. And I used to be very embarrassed, I guess, or reluctant ever to speak about money. But you know, a couple of things have come to my mind that I found very interesting. I want to share one of them with you. Because I was thinking about Jesus himself. And I asked a question. Sometimes you ask a question of the internet. And the browser will come back with some really interesting statistics. Listen to this. It's about money and Jesus. Because, you know, we always think, oh, money and Jesus don't belong in the same ballpark. And it's interesting. Listen to this. There's four statements. Number one, did you know that Jesus talked more about money than he did about heaven and hell combined? Jesus talked more about money than about heaven and hell combined. Two, Jesus talked more about money more than anything else except for the kingdom of God. Number three, 11 out of 39 parables are explicitly about money. And number four, in the Gospel of Luke, one out of every seven verses is about money. I truly did not know that. Now, the reason I say that to you is because I've been a priest now for 42 years, and I still have the residual distaste of mixing money and religion. And that's a distaste that evidently Jesus did not seem to have. But anyway, needless to say, I want to talk about not just money, because listen, if you know, we make a big deal here about being an intentional disciple of Jesus. Remember, we make a distinction between being a cultural Catholic and being an intentional disciple. Now, please understand, a cultural Catholic is just a person who's grown up, at least he was baptized Catholic, and a lot of times there's hardly any other formation. There's nothing else. Sometimes they go to church. But a cultural Catholic basically is a person who is formed by the culture that they inhabit and not by the gospel that they profess. So if we were to say it here, for example, I would say I am more an American than I am a Christian. My first and foremost identity is to be an American. And for a disciple of Jesus, that can't be true. Now, for a cultural Catholic, it can be very much true. Because, you know, all religions these days, I think society in itself has a little kind of a religion flavor, but that's about it. You know, you dig a little deeper between religion flavor and a lot of people are kind of just doing what society does. So What's important for us as intentional disciples is to make sure that all of the decisions of your life, all of them, are made by asking that old silly question, which is not so silly, what would Jesus do? Because that is what we are his disciples. And remember, I always remind you that being a disciple of Jesus is being a student of Jesus. And if you're a student of Jesus, what's the course? Well, the course is figuring out how to live as a human being, acknowledging that you're screwed up, and acknowledging that you need to imitate the only normal human being that has ever existed. And the only normal human being that's ever existed is Jesus. The fact that we think we're normal is a testament to the fact that we're all screwed up in the same way. So we all look at each other and go, hey, you're screwed up, I'm screwed up, we're normal. But actually, Jesus is the only normal human being. And so when you're a disciple of Jesus, you begin by saying, I know that I'm not normal the way God wants me to be. And that Jesus is basically God saying, y'all have messed this up so bad that I'm going to come and be human so that you can see what a normal human being is supposed to look like. Jesus is the only normal human being. And that's why we say we're messed up and we need a teacher to teach us how to be human. That's what a Christian is supposed to be. A cultural Catholic goes to Mass, says they believe, but they really don't do anything. A Catholic Christian disciple is a person who says, no, I have to imitate Jesus in every part of my life. Now, let me start by just repeating something that I'm sorry if you've heard it before. This is one of the things that I just love. Okay? And it just helps me so much to understand what I do for a living or for a dying or whatever you call it. But imagine what I do. And that's the word worship. I love that word ever since I did the etymology of that word, because it tells me what I'm doing at Mass, especially. Well, come to Mass and you say, I'm here to worship God. Well, okay, what does that mean? Because I think when you're growing up and you think about worshiping, you think about sitting around going, I worship you, I worship you. But that's not what worship means. Worship is actually such a silly little word to understand. Ship, the last part of the word worship, ship means the art and practice of anything. So you have penmanship, craftsmanship, authorship, you know, sportsmanship. It's the art or practice of anything. So where does the W-O-R come from? Well, W-O-R is a shortened word for worth, W-O-R-T-H. And so now you have worth-ship. We just drop the th and we call it worship. But what it really means is the art and practice of what you worship. So what does that mean? Making sure that the list of what you worship in life is in its right order, so that you don't get messed up by forgetting, because that's why we're messed up. We're messed up because we end up having the things that are worthwhile in a messed up order. And so when Jesus came, we're supposed to look at him and say, oh, these are the things that he thinks are, he lives as the most important ones. And then we're supposed to imitate that. Not just about money, about everything. Everything. about every decision in your life, about your sexuality, about your job, about your time off, the way you handle your talents, the way you handle everything in your life needs to be a reflection of the way he lived life. So it's that kind of thing that whenever we speak about money or anything, that's what we're trying to get to is how ought we, as disciples of Jesus, how ought we to manage the things that have been entrusted to us? Because remember, nothing is yours. You're not taking any of it with you. You are entrusted with something. And when you entrust someone with something, it doesn't mean that it's theirs. It means that you are taking care of it for another. So nothing is yours. And like I said, you're not taking it with you. Now, right there, take a pause. Because one of my favorite jokes fits in just beautifully right there. Some of you may have heard it because it's one of my total favorites. There was a super rich man, super, super rich. Not super rich. He had about $3 million. And he found out he was dying. And so he decided that he was so selfish that he cashed out everything. Paid for his funeral and cashed out everything. And he got $3 million in cash. And he had it divided into three bags of $1 million apiece. Well, he said, I'm taking it with me. I don't care what people say. I'm taking the money with me. And so he put $1 million in cash in each in a bag. 1 million, 2 and 3 million. Three different bags. And then he decided that the person that he could most trust would be, to carry out his final wishes, would be the three clergy who lived in that small town. The Jewish rabbi, the Catholic priest, and the Baptist minister. Well, he calls them in and he says, I'm giving each of you a bag with $1 million. I'm having an extra wide coffin made. And I expect when you come to my funeral that you will put, each of you will put a bag with that $1 million in my coffin. I want to take it with me. I worked for it, and I'm taking it. So, the day of the funeral came, and sure enough, these three dudes take their bag, and they put it in, and they walk up to the coffin and put in their bag. Well, on their way home, they begin to talk, and the Jewish rabbi speaks first, and he says, you know, guys, I really feel bad. I really feel bad. My synagogue needs a new roof. And I know that he's with God now, and he regrets having said what he said. So, I hate to say it, but I took $100,000. So we could put a new roof in our synagogue. And the Baptist guy says, oh, wow, am I glad you said something. Because you see, there's this property that's on sale right across from us. And why, I've got to have it for our church. Only I took $250,000 to buy the property. And then the Catholic priest looks at both of them and says, I am so ashamed of you guys. We promised that we will put the whole amount in there. If you were going to do something, you should do what I did. I stuffed the bag full of newspaper and I put a personal check for $1 million. Now, I'm not sure that's immoral. You know, it's all paper, you know, and the check is for $1 million. But anyway, you can't take it with you. You can't take it with you, not even if you try. And that's what the gospel's about. You know, the gospel, actually the gospel doesn't want to take it, the guy doesn't want to take it with him. The gospel is basically, the guy says, what am I going to do? I've got a huge retirement. And then he says, aha, I'm going to retire early. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to enjoy, I'm going to eat and drink and be merry. And I've got a long time for all of this. And then God answers him and says, you fool. You fool. Tonight, your life will be demanded of you. And to whom will all this piled up stuff of yours go? I think that that is what God is doing there in that parable, is challenging the man, because notice, when he makes his decision, notice how the hierarchy of what is worthwhile is in how he makes his decision. It's all about him. It's, I've got, and eat and drink and be merry. And I've got nothing about anybody else. And then the gospel ends by saying, this is going to be the way it is for people who make themselves rich in what the world understands, but does not make themselves rich in what God needs, what God wants. You're not going to take it with you. The only thing you can do is actually send it ahead. Because the day you die, they don't take dollars in heaven. The currency in heaven is not that. The currency in heaven is the quality with which you have loved and how you used what you have for the good of your family and for the good of other people. I mean, there's another story that I liked. I just heard this one, and I don't know if it's true, but it sounds very, very much probably like it could be true. I can't remember when, but 10, 20 years ago, the stock market just collapsed, the housing bubble and, you know, all that stuff. Well, evidently, there was a very generous and wealthy man who, when that happened, he had donated money to medical centers, to colleges and all kinds of places, and lots of places had named buildings after him. And when the stock market or the housing bubble went, he lost everything. He lost everything. And one day he was standing evidently at one of the, in an office, looking across the street and across the way at several buildings that had his name on it. And one of the persons in the room saw him looking at all those buildings, and they said to him, boy, I bet you wish you had all that money that you gave away. I bet you wish you had it now. And he turned around and he said, no, you know, it turns out that everything I wanted to keep, I lost, and everything I gave away, I kept. And that's true. The only thing that he kept was that which he used for the good of others. And I think that the criticism of the gospel is exactly that. Is that when we think about, we not just about money, but about our lives, about our decisions, about what we think is good or evil, and it's all about me, that's where it gets really nasty. And that's where human beings begin to really be warped. Now, I told you that this homily was about DSF. which is the Diocesan Services Fund. And it is. We're halfway through the year, okay? The problem that we're having right now is that this year, we got caught by Harvey, okay? And we got caught not only by Harvey, which is still devastating our area. Our area is still not recovered from it. But then there were people who rightly so were angry about the whole priest, you know, abuse kind of scandal. And rightly so. But the problem is that, the Harvey thing just ended up hurting people financially. But the priest abuse thing, it's interesting because I had a personal experience, not with priest abuse, but I had a personal experience recently. Our parish got audited. Now, please understand, when I say audited, I don't mean by the federal government, okay? I mean by the diocese. The diocese goes around and picks out churches and says, let's see how you guys are doing. And I mean, I thought I was doing very well. And this is probably going to get back to the cardinal. Ah, what the heck. I'm pretty close to retirement anyway. But they really made me angry. I was going to say they peed me off. Because they nitpicked me to death. Nitpicked me. You know, if you don't have a receipt for this, you don't have a receipt for that. It was just, I was so angry at the diocese that I was thinking about, you know, I'm not going to talk about money anymore. I'm not going to help the diocese anymore. I'm just going to withdraw the whole thing. I was just livid. I've been a priest 42 years, and this is the way you treat me? You know, because every time your supervisor messes with you, and especially if they don't do it in a very nice way, you don't particularly enjoy it. But then, as I was ranting and raving about what I was going to do to get back at the diocese, notice how wonderful your pastor is, okay? Everything that I was going to do to get back at the diocese, a good friend of mine said just one thing, and it immediately clicked. He said, so who are you going to hurt by that? Who are you going to hurt by that? You're going to hurt the diocese, or are you going to hurt people who rely on those services? Are you going to hurt the people? Is that what this is all about? And I had to admit, I can't, because that's just hurting people. Just hurting people. Just because some jerks did stupid things. So, where are we on the DSF? The DSF, I want you to remember what this is all about. Diocesan Services Fund, now please understand, I know a lot of you come here regularly and you know exactly what DSF is. The problem as a pastor that I always have is that when I look around, I see a good 20% of the people here I've never seen before. And so, I don't presume that everybody knows what DSF is all about. Well, it stands for, so allow me just a little bit, Diocesan Services Fund, DSF. Okay? Now, what is that? See, the situation is that when Jesus gave us our mission, remember, Jesus gave us a mission. He said to the disciples and to all the rest of the church, he said, go to all nations, baptize them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teach them everything that I have taught you. That's the mission he gave us. That's the only reason why any of these churches exist. Because Jesus told us to do it. And since we are his followers, his disciples, we're doing what he told us to do. Now, what is it? Let's just take St. Cyril's. What do we do here? Well, you know what we do. We celebrate Mass. Hopefully we give you a decent homily so you can learn something. We have certainly have beautiful music so you can worship God. But then we have boatloads of classes for kids, for adults, for young adults, for teenagers. We have prayer groups. We have all kinds of stuff going on all the time. And that is, we're doing it because that's our mission. We're supposed to do that. But we can't do it. I wasn't sent here to do it all myself. I was sent here to get everybody together so that we could all be disciples that took the mission on together. Well, ultimately, that's the mission of the parish. And that's why every week we thank you for supporting what the parish does. Because you see it. Open the bulletin. You see what we do. But here's the kicker. Not everything that has to be done can be done by the parish. Let me give you several examples. Imagine that right now you are sitting at another parish, St. Vincent de Paul Catholic Church. It's located smack in the middle of the medical center. Each parish is supposed to take care of the sick people within its boundaries. Now, you're sitting at St. Vincent de Paul, and I'm your pastor, and I have an assistant pastor. Are you saying to me that I have to be responsible for every Catholic in every sick bed in every hospital inside the medical center? I can't do it. Nobody can do it. There's thousands of them. And so what do? Do we say, well, you know, tough luck? They can't do that because that's not our mission. And so, thanks be to God, a couple of bishops back, there was this little Czech bishop named Bishop Markovsky, and he instituted something called the Diocesan Services. Now, listen to that, Diocesan Services. Why? Because he knew that what we need to do is pool together so that we can send chaplains. And now there are chaplains that go to the medical center and they visit thousands of people. There's like 25, 30 chaplains. And that's all they do is visit people, give the sacraments. But it doesn't stop there. Think of the prisons. Jesus said about visiting him in prison. When you're in prison, that's really lonely. And to see a priest, a minister, a deacon, to see someone who's there, not bossing you around, who comes to look at you and say, how you doing as a human being, who doesn't dehumanize you. That's amazing. But who does that? Well, there's a whole chaplain corps for the prisons, the sailors, the Port of Houston. Do you know how many ships dock in the Port of Houston? Hundreds of ships a year. And when the sailors come off out of being several weeks or months inside those ships, before the Catholic Church got there, you know who met them at the shipyards? Drug dealers and prostitutes. That's what met them at the shipyards. And now there is a religion center there that DSF supports, and they have a place to come in, get a warm meal, watch some TV, get off the ship, free phone calls home to be able to talk to a chaplain, talk to anybody. And it's a very safe place to be. And you could go on and on, you know, who do you think trains? We have, religion, not school, CCE classes for all the teenagers and for kids and for everybody. Who trains the catechists? Who trains the trainers? The DSF does. Marriage preparation, annulment, who trains them and who runs that? The DSF does. The ministry to the deaf, the ministry to the blind, the seminary, all of deacons. In our parish, we have three deacons. Okay, Deacon Eduardo, Deacon Raul, and Deacon Bob. Arturo and Deacon Bob. Who do you think trained them? The DSF. Okay, so we benefit because no one can do that. No one parish can do that. So, let me bring this homily in for a landing. We're behind. We're like, the way they figure it out is, I think it's like a 10% of, 10 or 15%, I think, of our overall offering per year. And then they say, okay, this is your offering per year, this percentage, I think it's like maybe 12 or 13%. This is what you have to come up with from your parish. So the wealthier parishes have to come up with a lot more than we do. But still, we have to come up with, I think it's like $170,000. Okay? Now, if we don't come up with it from our congregation, guess what happens? They come in, because the diocese controls the computers and the bank accounts. They don't let wacky pastors control the money. And so when they come in and they go, oh, you were $30,000 short. And they take it out of your bank account. Okay? So we're about 30 grand short. And so what we're doing is we're asking everybody, and that's because of the Harvey thing, and because we started a month late, because of the whole abuse thing, all of that was horrible. And so that's where we are. Okay? We're gonna pay it one way or another. It may be by, less air conditioning or could be, I don't know what. But I'm just saying that we need to raise it. So, last thing. If you haven't pledged, if you could share just a bit. If everybody, in this parish, we have 4,000 people that come to Mass every Sunday. You know, if everybody gave a little bit, we'd be fine. The problem is that very few people give the most and nobody else hardly gives anything, right? So I'm asking you, if you haven't pledged, there's some pledge cards in the benches, in the pews. See if you can make a little bit of a pledge. We really appreciate it. Cause, we can't just say, hey, tough. We can't do anything for you. That's not our mission. We're Catholic. And remember what Catholic means. It means we don't exclude anybody. We don't exclude. Kato holos means for all. Jesus came for all. So, think about it. I appreciate you listening to me.